you repeat the introductory stuff again?
Yeah, so Planning Commission, May 12th, commissioners present, Matt Cochran, Elena Hughes, Tina Carlson, John Varanth, Colleen Thompson, and alternate Shelley Price Gibson. And is it a town? Are you the town clerk, Peg Smith?
No, I'm Planning Commission clerk.
Planning Commission clerk, Peg Smith. So we'll start with approving the agenda. So I'd like to make a motion to approve the April or the May agenda for tonight.
Second, Dawn.
Okay, any discussion about that? All right, then, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Lenny Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
All right. Second order of business. Approving the minutes from the April 14th meeting. So I'll make a motion to approve the April 14th minutes.
I have some corrections.
Let's second that, then we'll go in on the corrections.
Okay, I'll second it, John.
Okay, corrections.
Okay, on the last paragraph from the bottom, we're talking about streets. He, which would be myself, said the concept of delineating all subdivision streets as private streets was objected to in comments by Gladys, Judy Drain, and Elizabeth. That was public streets. It's not private streets. And I would like the clarification that that was objected to in comments at the January Planning Commission meeting, which I think I made clear. So that's one correction. And then Matt.
Can you say that again?
So the correction.
Could you say that? I got the public streets.
Okay, and then was objected to in comments by Gladys Lefevre, Judy Drain, and Elizabeth Julian at the January Planning Commission meeting, period.
Okay.
Then Matt, the first sentence at the top of the second page, it said, Matt said has pulled all the priorities. Could you clarify what you said?
We're going to scrap that sentence.
Okay.
So hey, we'll great. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so sentence struck. Okay. And that's the end of my corrections.
Anyone else?
Oh, one more. I think in the public hearing on the Donna Owens RSTR, you said Matt asked about Donna's presence. I think you meant whether she was going to be present at the RSTR, not whether she was present at the meeting, but that's very vague.
Correct.
Clarify that as you would.
Yeah, that was definitely her presence in the for her guests. Okay. Thank you.
All right, let's take a vote with the corrections there. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elaine Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John, aye.
Okay. Did Colleen respond?
Yeah, I wasn't there last month.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Lee, sorry, I forgot to introduce you. Lee Nellis is here. And we're gonna, so the next item on the agenda is we're gonna open up, before we open up the public hearing on, how are we wording this tonight? On the proposed amendments regulating land divisions. Could you give us like a 5 minute or less cliff notes on this, just the outline for context?
I can do it much quicker than 5 minutes, I think.
Great, perfect.
The purpose of these amendments is to address the way that property lines evolve through time in incremental ways. The change in a lot line, the change in property boundaries, generally voluntary, generally upon the agreement of the owners who are involved. And so if I buy a vacant lot in a subdivision and discover that it would be much easier to build a driveway up to where the building envelope is and I want to build, if I had 15 feet on my neighbor's side, and my neighbor and I work out a trade, a swap of land area to maintain our minimum lot sizes, we can do it using the plat amendment procedure rather than having to go back and create a new subdivision. And it's that type of day-to-day routine situation that comes up over time. You might go for a year or two without ever having one come up, right? So it's designed here to be clear about how incremental changes can be made. Property boundary adjustments outside of subdivisions are not regulated by the town. Within subdivisions, they are regulated. And this tries to clarify how all that happens. And it also has a few other bits and pieces to it in terms of some definitions that need to be here in order to use the operative parts of it. But that's really as simple as it is. We're just trying to have a method that is consistent with state law for dealing with incremental changes in the boundaries between parcels.
Great. So, and this is basically updating to state, changing state law or as it is.
We are consistent with state law. The town's existing ordinances really did not spend much time on this, and you would never have been able to figure out a clear path, a clear procedure, okay, for the Planning Commission to address these incremental changes. And so now we have good definitions and a clear procedure. Really doesn't change the rules for dividing land in the first place. It really doesn't change or affect the zoning. It simply is the clarification of how property owners work together to adjust boundaries.
Okay, thank you very much. So before we open this for public hearing, I want to just, if there are questions for clarification about this ordinance from the public, now is the time to ask them before the public hearing where we'll take your statements. Are there any questions from the public about this?
I see no hands raised on Zoom.
All right, then I'm going to make a motion to open the public hearing for the proposed amendments regulating land divisions.
I'll second that. Colleen Thompson.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Dana Hughes, aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
John Verrath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, the floor is open for the public. We're here to hear your statements.
Tina, could you tell me who's in the room right now?
Yes. In the public. So Martin Nelson is here with us.
Okay. He's the only public member?
Correct.
Ooh, okay. And we have Dan, who I think is Dan Pence on Zoom, and Pete and Tina, who must be Peter Benson.
Yes, correct.
And Donna Owen. And Ashley, you were here. Ashley,
he was there. Okay, well, I don't hear any comments going, and give it a last five count. If anyone's, seems like the wind has silenced us all. Five, four, three, two, and one. Thank you. Make a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second it. Colleen Thompson.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina Hughes, aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
John Brath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, great. I would like to go straight into discussion and or a vote and discussion with the PC before we open up the next public hearing on this. So, any questions, comments from the PC before we put it to motion?
Go ahead.
I think it's important that we do an up or down vote on forwarding this to the town council. We should really be much more prompt in processing these things to some closure. So, and this has been lingering for quite a while. I still think that the current draft has some excessive detail compared to other municipalities. But that's just a remark and an opinion on my part at this point.
Thank you, John. Anyone else?
This is Elena. I just want to comment that I just went through this process of doing a adjustment, and without this having been written, it was so much more complicated. And having just done it, I think this really lays everything out well and is very clear.
Any other comments?
Is it state law to include parcels and lots definitions? I mean, I guess this is just to clarify whether a lot has been or a parcel has been divided or not. Is that correct? To be called a lot?
It's only a lot if it's in a recorded subdivision. Everything okay. else is a parcel.
Okay, thank you.
So for the purposes of our business, there's only two types of land. Well, there's three types of land. There's the land that's under roads and rights of way. There's lots and there's parcels. And the difference is that a lot appears on a recorded subdivision plat. A parcel is everything else.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion then to forward the, I have to keep looking at the title. The proposed amendments regulating land divisions to the town council. Anyone want to second that?
I'll second that, Tina Carlson.
Okay, is there any final discussion on this before we take a vote? Specifics. All right, thank you for the work on this, Lee. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Lena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Brath, abstain.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Was that everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Next is... before we go into the public hearing on immediate subdivision amendments, John, would you give us the cliff notes of what you've done here and what you have intended with it, please?
Okay, I'll be repeating a lot of what I said last month, but I've do it for the record again. This draft ordinance really provides concise wording that focuses on the original problems regarding small subdivisions that were first brought to the Planning Commission in July of 2021. This returns us to about where we were in October of 21 when we had a ordinance sent to town council, which was returned because we had some ambiguous wording. That has now been also corrected. So I think we have an ordinance that has a number of concise bullet points that really stand alone. And we're recommending those specific ordinance changes to town council. After the public hearing, if there are concerns about any of those provisions, we certainly can discuss and amend them individually. So that's kind of the Cliff Notes version. But what this does is several things. It it clarifies, it replaces the considerable discretional language with explicitly allowing private driveways to access lots and subdivisions with four or fewer homes. It repeals the lot width to depth standard in the table of development standards. It makes explicit that the area easements is not considered when calculating minimum lot size. It clears up the current wording regarding all lots having frontage on a street by putting in that it's frontage on a street or driveway that leads to a public road or street. And it corrects a typographical error where an or were switched, which in effect made it impossible to give building permits on new lots. So that was clearly a typographical error. So that's the changes.
Thank you, John. So before we open public hearing, same thing for the public out there. If you have any specific questions about this ordinance, now is the time to ask them for clarification, and then we'll be opening up the public hearing for your statements. Are there any questions?
Donna, Owen raised your hand.
Yes, is this what, I'm a little confused as to what, it just greater clarity doesn't really tell us what you're doing here. Is this this quote unquote minor subdivision that we're trying to put back in? We had one years ago and we took them out and now we're trying to put one back. Or is this just wording to the subdivision ordinance that we have?
It's corrections to specific paragraphs of the existing subdivision ordinance.
So it is not creating a minor subdivision ordinance.
No, it's not. We sort of changed directions with that. And that's why we've titled it, or, you know, the immediate subdivision amendments.
Okay. No, that's fine. I just needed to know, this is still just the subdivision ordinance we have, but changing a few words. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yes, we have Mark here, Nelson.
Should be on. Okay, Mark Nelson, Golden Resident. Okay, Mark Nelson, Golden Resident. Okay, so when I arrived tonight, I've got some various documents here, and the one I've been was working on was March 24th. Proposed amendments regulating land divisions. So after comparing that with the one that Tina had there, I can see that I don't have the same one that John worked on. One thing I wanted to clarify then is this the repeal of the lot width and depth standard. Is that still on the
Yes, it is.
Okay, that was my question. So that's what I want to address.
Can everybody hear him, or should we move into a?
It's fine.
Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, can the people out there?
On that? Oh, they want to say one
other thing. Oh, sure.
I wanted to thank you very much for getting all this information out on the public eye well in advance of the hearing. So I appreciate that, and I think everybody else does too. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Any other questions? All right, then. I'm going to make a motion to open the public hearing for the immediate subdivision amendments.
John, second.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Lena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Brandt, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, the floor is open.
I'd like to make a comment, please.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
I really think that John proposing is simply common sense and is undoing several ordinances that are quite frankly unworkable. The bird's eye view of Boulder quickly shows how unworkable requiring all subdivided lots to border on a town street. A subdivision is any piece of property that's divided. So it would include everybody, not just some developer from out of town. And I think that there's at least two people, well, three, counting Elena. Colleen couldn't subdivide, I don't think, her property where Heather and Ryan have a trailer because it wouldn't border on a town street. Same with Matt and Constance. So I think that's just unworkable. The other thing that I think is unworkable is the subtract, the easements being subtracted from the lot size. It's not a right-of-way. A right-of-way is owned by someone else. An easement is owned by the landowner, just letting someone drive across their land. They still own the land. It just makes no sense to me. But on a bigger picture, I want to point out that the PC has been dealing with these several issues for nearly a year. And I appreciate your desire to want to have some sort of a comprehensive rewrite of the small subdivision ordinances. But in the meantime, nearly a year, people's lives are on hold. Elena and Dylan, for instance, they've been dealing with this since July. And as everybody on the PC talks and talks and sends it to the town council and it comes back, their lives are on hold. They don't know if they've got a workable parcel. They're not sure that they can develop it. They don't know that if they can subdivide it. They don't know if they can irrigate it. They don't know about building. Their lives are on hold. I think these things need to be moved along to the town council. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Dan.
The record, that was Dan Pence.
Yep.
I can't see in the room. Do we have someone stepping up to the mic?
Oh, yeah, Marcus.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so as I said before on this repeal of the lot width depth standard, I guess I don't understand what you're doing there. We've had numerous planners over the years that said this is a very important standard to have in the ordinance. So why are you repealing it? Yeah, you know, flag lots are not a good idea. And that's the whole idea of having the lot width and depth standard in place. So I just wondered if I missed something and you're addressing that somewhere else, or just why are you repealing that? So I think, I'd like you to adjust that and I'd like to see that standard stay in place. That's really all I have to say about what I've been covering.
Mark, okay. Can you say why you think flag lots aren't a good idea?
Well, because you end up with these long strip lots, which, you know, they're not good planning. As simple as that. You know, we've had every planner we've ever had has said that flag lots are bad, that they're not good for planning for various reasons, you know, and I mean, from aesthetics to just, you know, practical applications of trying to develop the lot. And all the planners we've had in the past have said that, you know, this is a good standard. So I don't know why did it come out that we thought this is a standard we should get rid of? So, you know, I'd like you to explain yourselves on that. And that's really all I have to say right now. So thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Any other comments?
I don't see any.
All right. Countdown. And we'll call it. I'll make a motion to close the public hearing on immediate subdivision amendments.
I'll second it, Tina Carlson.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay. So discussion from the Planning Commission, I think I'd like to do first. So I'll start and then we can go one by one. So I guess I have questions, but on the outset, I actually, I agree with Mark on the lot width depth standard. I don't know a lot about it, but I do know that I don't quite understand it if there is nothing. Having been a mapper and a surveyor as a career, I sort of like neat and orderly lots to some extent. If there's no lot width to depth standard, does that mean that someone can carve out a circle on their property? Like, where is there any structure to a lot at all? And my concern here is that, you can design some really terrible lots. And I understand the benefits that it gives people some option to do things on difficult lots that already exist. But I don't understand, but I see more danger with it. And so I guess I'm asking Lee and John and others, like, you know, what are the dangers of not having this? Why was it here in the first place?
Ed, can you scroll down to that, please?
Yes.
Right now it's a 1-3? Is that's our
yes.
lot width to depth? Yeah.
Lee, do you want to go first?
Well, flag lots are just one way of solving certain problems about access. And there are cases where flag lots are what in fact is the orderly thing to do because you're trying to achieve access to a public road. I can tell you from very nearly 50 years of experience that easements are a terrible way to get access to homes. They result in disputes between neighbors. They result in tremendous amounts of litigation. And if you want to avoid those things, then with the Planning Commission having control over the layout of the plat anyway, there's no need to prohibit directly and outright a narrow part of a lot that might solve an access problem and avoid the issues. I would never advise a person to buy a home that had a private easement for an access. And that's, you know, a difference between me and the Planning Commission at this point. But that's the reason that we are talking about repealing the 3-to-1 lot ratio, is that it takes away a potential solution to access problems. And that could be access for a water line. Doesn't have to be the driveway or vehicular access as well. And, you know, it's okay to look at a plat and see the nice, orderly, even layout of lots. But the world itself is not orderly and even. Nature occasionally does draw a straight line. But for the most part, we work with fuzzy lines and fuzzy realities. And this is just one tool that the existing ordinance deprives us of. There are a lot of cases where it's not appropriate, especially as the densities increase. But when you're talking about relatively large lots, having a 60-foot wide strip that ensures that lot owner access to a public road without having to go to court to enforce an easement that a neighbor has decided they don't like, generally speaking, in my experience, is a good thing.
Okay, and to play devil's advocate, what are the dangers that you've seen, or the abuse of opening something up like this? How can
I have never seen, again, at the low densities that we're talking about in Boulder, never seen a problem with flag lots. They function just fine where they've been permitted. They look odd sometimes if you're looking at them on a plat, but let's face it, we really don't spend a lot of time looking at the plat of a subdivision. We look at the reality there. And if you see a driveway leading up to a home that is, shall we say, a few hundred feet off the public road, do you even know the difference between a flag lot and an easement when you see that visually?
Right. But does it, no. But does this also, doesn't this open it up to much more than just a flag lot? I mean, someone can do anything like a 10-foot wide lot that's 1,000
feet
long. Well,
you can't approve, the Planning Commission by law cannot approve a lot on which you can't meet the zoning standards, right? So you can't have a 10-foot wide lot because you couldn't ever meet the setbacks.
So what's the minimum width of a lot you could have if you repealed this?
Well, that depends upon what the owner is going to propose as a structure in between the setbacks. But you could have, I suppose that I think this is highly unlikely. And it certainly doesn't match the pattern of the way land is generally speaking laid out in Boulder. But in theory, you could have a lot that's, 40 or 50 feet wide and still meet the setbacks with putting a house in there at some point. You could have lots that get fairly narrow. But from a practical point of view, if you have to be able to put a structure in there, it's only going to be so narrow, right? So
my last question then is there a happy medium where you can loosen this without getting rid of it altogether?
Well, the medium that would exist, and I mean, that's a good question, and there is an answer to that, which is simply to be really clear, which the existing subdivision ordinance isn't clear about much of anything, but you could say that we're going to make it really clear that the Planning Commission has the authority to evaluate lot shape and size, because we're talking about both, right? We're not just talking about one particular dimension. We're talking about the overall shape. Just say that the Planning Commission has the authority to evaluate the compatibility of the proposed lot shape and size with surrounding development. And that would give the Planning Commission discretionary authority to say, hey, these weird narrow lots, which are not driveways, but are narrow lots created for whatever other purpose, aren't compatible with what's going on here, and we're going to reject that plat. So it would certainly be possible to hit a happy medium in there.
Thank you. John, you have anything to add?
Yeah, quite a bit here to pick up on those ideas. Fully agree with Lee about an easement having a lot of advantage. I mean, a flag lot having advantages over an easement. But part of this started off with the fact that with a lot of existing parcels in Boulder are very irregular. So when you try to hit a 1-3, you end up doing some tortured compromises, ending up with little narrow strips of land or something like that, because it doesn't work out. The other one is terrain. And a good example is down in the draw, where you have lots that are fairly narrow that go all the way up to the top of the mesa. So they have they're narrow and deep, but there was no way to build on the face of the slope. So that was a very logical way to do it. Something that's come up in the last month is this issue of hydrants. If you force a 1-3 on a parcel that's already rectangular with the narrow end on the road, you're going to force the second house to be way back, further than the fire code distance from the hydrant access on the road. Whereas to relieve this 1-3 standard, the houses could be both placed much close to the road, where the infrastructure and emergency access are better. So those are sort of some of the reasons for proposing to delete this. Early on, and several months ago in the discussions, we talked exactly about what Lee talked about, which was having more of a Planning Commission needs to evaluate the the plat and let the proponent make an argument for why the lot shapes proposed make sense, be it terrain, septic, field location, fire hydrant access, or anything like that. That's a good way to go, but that was starting to get bogged down, so that's why I had proposed just for now removing the 1-to-3 ratio.
Okay. Well, I mean, I want to hear from everyone else, but for me, I like everything that's written in the immediate subdivision amendments, but I would prefer to do more research on this and leave this aspect out until we spend some more time following out the, I think, the right way to do it that feels safer to me. That's all I have to say about this amendment, the immediate subdivision amendment. Anyone else?
This is Elena. Is it possible for the happy medium to be, can we do flag lots without, can we allow for flag lots without allowing for, can flag lots be the only exception, is I guess what I'm asking, without just allowing the 1-to-3 to go out the window entirely?
We end up, and John pointed this out, we end up giving the Planning Commission more discretion than this does. This just eliminates them, right? Very simple, very straightforward. We can write a standard that gives the Planning Commission discretionary review for compatibility with the terrain and the neighbors of lot shape and size. It's not hard to write that and add it in at an appropriate point. I think John's intent here, if I may, and he can certainly speak for himself, his intent was to keep this incredibly super simple. And that's what he did. And eliminating this is simpler than writing the discretionary language. But, you know, Matt's suggestion that you can take this out and send the rest on to council is absolutely true. Someone could make a motion to remove this and then send the rest on to council, and we would then come back to talking about that, and we could write discretionary language that allows for a flag lot where it makes sense, which there will be cases, in my estimation, in Boulder, there will be cases where it's actually the right solution to question, but that can be handled one case at a time by the Planning Commission. It just requires a little more complexity, and that's what John was trying to avoid with keeping these very simple, but we can detach that from this and send the rest on.
Well, I'm only one of five, so what do the others think?
Well, I would back you up, Matt. This is Shelley Price Gibson, and I know I'm a side owner and so on of the planning commissions, but I agree with you. I think we should look at this a little more. I'm new with the planning and commission, so I'd like to hear other sides to this before going forward with it.
This is Tina Carlson, and I'd just like to say that if in fact this is allowing for an easement that is, can be used without having a neighbor or we're already dealing with an easement issue kind of for road, which might end up, you know, being not for the Planning Commission, but for the people involved, a legal battle. So I would like to avoid that. But I would agree that it probably would be best for us to revisit this so that we're all clear about what we're getting into.
So the only thing I have to say is I can understand what John is trying to do as far as cleaning up some things and making a little bit easier. I think it was just something that we picked out. I also see that we can let it go and delve into it. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, that's really all I have to say.
Hey, Matt, I have a question. Is an easement open to everybody? It's like a public road. Am I right?
Let's have Lee answer that, please.
Easements can be written to provide access only to certain people for certain reasons. And that's one of the reasons why, as I said, I would never advise you to buy a home that is only accessible via an easement unless you are very, very careful and have very good legal counsel about what you're getting into. And, you know, you could write an easement that the homeowner can go up there and then say, oh, wait a minute, the ambulance can't go. Now, is that going to happen in practical reality? I doubt it. I can't imagine it, although there are some pretty crazy people out there. But certainly I can imagine someone who's like, okay, I bought a lot that has an easement over it. That easement lies in favor of the homeowner up the hill. It does not lie in favor of the UPS truck. Right?
Right.
Right. I mean, this is case by case. And that's one of the problems with it, is that different easements are written in different ways. And then you have the interpretation and the application by both the holder of the easement and the person whose land the easement crosses. It can get silly, you know, really, to be the most honest thing, is that people get a feud between themselves over, hey, your dog ran off with my chicken, so I'm not going to let the UPS truck go up your road. That could happen. That's why the flag lots have some appeal to me. And, you know, they work well in rural areas. They begin to become cumbersome at high densities. Wouldn't want to use them there. But I guess what I'm hearing here is that we probably need to go down the path that Matt has suggested and take this out of the other changes that Mr. Grant proposed, all of which have a good corrective function. And we could very easily write up language here that gives the Planning Commission discretion without permitting flag lots in every case. And that seems to me to be the way the thing is leaning. So maybe we should have a motion to delete that and see if it passes and then move on.
Thank you, Leah. Any other discussion on any of the other aspects of this before we?
I have a few more thoughts on the flag lots. I guess the thing that I keep thinking about is, I feel like if someone can name some of the dangers of flag lots, I would love to hear what they are, because I feel like I'm not really hearing that. And to me, it just seems like it's another potential obstacle for people, and potentially more limiting and more cost prohibitive. So meaning, like, the way our ordinances are written, it is very beneficial to be on the road to get city water. It's beneficial to be on the road without extending the main line. To get a hydrant access, it's beneficial to be on the road. Regular, like Lee's saying, access, rather than having shared easements and driveway agreements and things like this with people. The way our things are written, it is very beneficial to be on the road. So I think that it would be helpful to allow people that option. And I don't really see the downside of allowing that option. So if anyone can name that.
Well, for me, the issue isn't flag lots. For me, the issue is what people might do other than flag lots. And so here's one example. A lot of people in Boulder who already have land have bought land because surrounding them are properties that can't be subdivided in some way. And if you change the width to depth standard, suddenly a house can appear next door where it wasn't, quote, allowed by ordinance before. And I think that's a real issue. That's one of the things I see. Make sense?
Well, I guess, Matt, you know, anytime that we do anything with land use, there's going to be some winners and some losers.
Correct.
What we have to do is look at the broad impact on the community. And as we're finding out with this discussion that's going on with hydrants, there are real advantages to putting the houses closer to the road. However, and also I just want to make a quick remark. I totally agree with Lee about all the disadvantages of easements, but it was very clear during our discussion in January that the political will was not there on the town council to be accepting dedication of new public streets. So as much as I agree with Lee, I think he's totally right that easements are not a good way to go. That seems to be what the town politically is supporting. But in interest of moving this on, I will make a motion to strike the paragraph that says repeat the lot width to depth standard and the text following it from this draft of the ordinance. And then we can vote on the amended or draft ordinance sent to town council.
Okay, I'll second that motion. Any final discussion on any part of the entirety of the immediate subdivision amendments? Any last words from the Planning Commission? All right. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes abstain. Tina Carlson, aye.
John, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. And let's just make note that let's further that discussion, especially around the PC discretionary use that you brought up, Lee. And that'll be on the table.
So at this point, I would like to make a motion to advance the ordinance amending towns Boulder Towns Code to provide greater clarity and practicality. So the motion is to recommend this motion as amended to town council.
I'll second that. Tina Carlson.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Brandt, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay, do we cover that procedurally then? Okay, great. Thanks, John. Okay, switching gears. Next on the agenda is, I would like to spend about 15 to 20 minutes, maybe 30 if possible, and talk about the housing issue that we've been wrestling with for a long time in Boulder. The idea here in this discussion with the Planning Commission and with Lee is to come up with a strategy in moving forward in researching different ideas that might be applicable to the unique character of Boulder and creating, quote, I put it in quotes because there's no great word for it, affordable housing, end quotes. Does that make sense? And Lee has sent us a memo with some of his thoughts, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts. So I suppose, why don't we start with you, Lee, and then we'll move on from there.
Okay, I will be brief. You and I have exchanged some thoughts about this, and John and I have exchanged some thoughts about this. And I think that we have to look at any conversation about making housing more accessible, more affordable in Boulder as starting with an educational process. And I think that, and I have a couple of things to say here, but the first thing is that I think strategically, the best thing the Planning Commission could do would be to sponsor a community forum, see who comes out, what they have to say, but mainly to bring in some speakers from your NeighborWorks, the statewide NeighborWorks affiliate, the DeMountain Housing. They've been active in small towns around. There are projects in other small towns, and I think getting people who have been hands-on with those projects to come to Boulder and say, look, here is what we did and how we did it. would be a really good way to begin. You can't go very far in this direction without acknowledging what I said in the memo that I sent to you, which is that the zoning is going to have to be reworked, or affordable housing efforts are going to be stillborn. There are a bunch of different ways to do that. What I sent you is the main ways that zoning can affect housing. If we added the question of open space in there, there'd have to be a couple more entries in that memo, but I was trying to keep it as simple as it could be. We've got to talk about that, but I really think that the first thing to do would be to say, let's figure out a forum sometime over the summer, hopefully, that people can hear about projects in other communities. I mean, you only have to go as far away as Escalante to have something to hear about. And just see who shows up, see what they have to say in response to what your guest speakers bring, and go forward informed by that experience. And then if you say, hey, it looks to us like we can, we have some pathways that we might want to explore, then we can get back to saying, okay, how do we open up the zoning to allow us to explore those pathways? The final thing I will say is that there's been, you know, some experience, some friction about a proposal that was at least represented as being affordable housing. The communication piece of that might not have been what it ought to be. But I think the biggest question that I heard during that conversation was, well, how do we know it's going to remain affordable? And there will be speakers who can come address that, but I'll just tell you, there are thousands, probably tens of thousands of housing units in the United States who are price restricted. Housing trusts all over the country create perpetually affordable housing using restrictions, deed restrictions. If you think about it, if you're the owner of a parcel of land, you can enter into contracts regarding that land, right? It's a basic property right thing. And you, one of the types of contracts that you could enter into if you were a group of people who wanted to have some affordable housing happen in Boulder, or a housing trust that was created under one of the statewide housing trusts working in Boulder, there's no obstacle to making the housing perpetually affordable. That's a legal thing that's been settled for many decades. The question is the practical reality of how do you do it? How do you assemble the land? How do you assemble the infrastructure? How do you make this thing work? And it requires a lot better communication than I think happened with the project that was proposed several months ago. And that's why I think your best strategy is to do some education, hopefully soon, and see how people in the community respond to that informally. And if the Planning Commission says, hey, we see some energy, positive energy here about this, then we can start talking about how you could make it work.
Great. Thank you, Lee. You know, and so, yeah, so I'm hearing priority or steps taken would be community forum, bringing in speakers, figuring out how other towns have done it around here. And most likely, in order to create that, we need some sort of zoning change, it looks like. For my own context that I want to put out there for this discussion is this. And I know I have talked a little bit with some of you about this, but and it's this, two things. The Planning Commission over the last few years created ADUs. So anyone with a primary residence can now build an ADU on their property. The design idea behind this to create opportunity for a long rental, which could or could be, I suppose. So that option still exists here already. The other is, by my count, and I'm sure there's partake, there's up to plus or minus 30 businesses in Boulder that are not primary residences. They're side and they're unrented. The housing issue is the houses are here, they're just not being utilized. We incentivize what we already.
Matt, you're breaking up pretty badly. Could you try turning off your video and seeing if that helps?
You have, rather than building more. Yeah. Okay, is that better? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you try some of that again?
Yeah, some of what you were
saying. Yeah, so really did you catch that about ADUs?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, you were just starting to talk about the 30 unoccupied, unrented.
Okay, homes. So yes, yeah. By my count, there are up to 30 sort of second home unoccupied houses and no, that are also not rented long-term. And so my, you know, observation is that there is housing here. It's just not being utilized. And, you know, if there was some way to incentivize at least long-term rentals as a way of affordable housing with the unoccupied houses that exist here, we wouldn't have to build more. So those are just my initial thoughts around this discussion. And yeah, so that's what I have to say.
Okay, this is John. Good points there, Lee. And thanks for all the exchange that we've had. It's helped sharpen my thinking. You know, I'll just start to say, Boulder is already changing and we need to be proactive in promoting a vision of what we want. Given current real estate price trends and our current land use ordinances, over time, Boulder is going to become more and more of a town of investor second homeowners, which is what Matt just referred to. In the process, existing open space and productive farmland will be continued to be converted into expensive houses on tracts that are too big to garden and too small to ranch. More importantly, I think it's really vital for Boulder to retain a diverse population that includes young adults and especially working age families with children. Without these valued community members, we'll not sustain important community resources such as the school and the ambulance. Local businesses will not have the necessary workers to operate, and the community will not have the volunteers and workers to fill important town, school, and social and service organization positions. But we're not the only town that's got this problem. I think every town that's in an attractive area in the West is facing the challenge of high real estate prices combined with low local wages. If I were to rent my house, which is occupied right now, but if it was not, at what I would consider market rates, people in Boulder couldn't afford it. These people in Boulder cannot afford $2,000, $2,500 a month rentals. And that's going to be a real problem in incentivizing a lot of these unoccupied homes. Well, the problem is that very few local jobs are full-time year-round with benefits. So it's not just the hourly rate, it's the number of hours a year that the person works that determines what they can afford. But as Lee mentioned, nearby communities, including Tropic, Escalante, and Torrey, are making some progress on attainable is a better word perhaps than housing, and especially rental housing. And as Lee said, we need to begin researching what's worked in nearby communities and what we can adapt. Those of you who look at the Insider might recall that on April 7th, there was an article about the attainable housing program where they're built two new and six rehabilitated rental houses at Tropic and two that are under construction in Escalante. This involved $1.5 million from a combination of HUD, USDA Rural Development, State of Utah, Garfield County, and nonprofit housing organizations. So it is clearly possible to bring it, put together packages with significant amounts of money to meet a need for affordable rental housing. As Lee mentioned, it is possible to de-restrict the housing to moderate income individuals, which is commonly defined as 80% of the area median income. And that for Garfield County is $47,000 a year. So that's not low income. That's the workers, the people who run the town. It's also possible, because other towns have done it, including Park City, to deed restrict rental housing to be occupied only by local workers. Again, that's usually involved with things that were the how the housing was originally financed. So it's very important that I think we look at it, tying any changes in zoning for creating new housing to the agreement to have deed restrictions that keep it long-term affordable. But as Lee said, I think a necessary first step is to discuss these issues with community stakeholders and determine if there's a willingness to consider the types of land use ordinance changes that are needed to create housing opportunities for local residents. If we don't have that political will, we're not going to get anywhere.
Okay. So, John, who do you identify as the community stakeholders?
You've got workers, you've got employers, you've got people who are potential investors in housing. You've got people on the town council who are probably some of the most important stakeholders because they have overlapping roles as landowners, as town council members who will ultimately vote on the ordinance changes, as parents of and grandparents of children who are potential occupants of these places, and as employers. So, you know, I think that's one of the key stakeholder groups we have to bring in early on is informal discussions with the political side of the town council to say, what are you willing to support? If you're finding something that you're opposed to, let's articulate, why are you opposed? What are you finding threatening? How could we meet your concerns and still move forward?
So do you see this as an effective way to do this as in a community forum or one-on-one conversations or both?
I think both are absolutely essential.
Okay.
I think that, as I told Lee, I think trying to move too fast on this is going to be threatening to a lot of people. There are some threatening ideas here, but yet people need to start understanding that a house with that's a duplex or fourplex with a couple adults and their kids living in it, from the outside, doesn't really look any different than a big single family home. It has really no more impact on the community valid interests of the health and public safety. And that's the kind of discussions we have to have.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's great. And before we move to like more actionable items, which is how I'd like to end the conversation this evening, I want to hear from the other Planning Commission members as well.
Okay, this is Tina Carlson, and I was involved in a Planning Commission years ago, and we talked about cluster developing as possibility of allowing for more affordable property, which didn't go through. But I would like to say too that we are at a point where the affordable lots in this town are gone. They are already sold. And so we kind of banked on the King's subdivision, is that what it's called, for quite a few years in our attempt to have some sense of affordable housing. So it's gone. So we need to move forward.
Yeah, great. What do you see as a priority?
Well, I'll agree with this forum. Hopefully that will get us further than the last time.
Okay, great. Thank you. Colleen or Elena, thoughts, ideas?
I'm kind of with Tina as far as listening to affordable housing, how to get people here for 15, 20 years now. And to me, I look at it, it's frustrating to me because I think what's happening to Utah and our real estate, it just seems like there's no way to make it happen because people want to get as much as they can for their properties, and you can't argue with them on that. And we've never gotten anywhere on this. And I also think our communities, we only have 200 people here. Our economic situation is, as far as jobs, is not very good. And I think for me, listening to maybe somebody like from Escalante to see how they did it, Tori, that's fine. But their towns are still so much bigger than ours. And so, I don't know what the answer is. But, you know, if it's worked in some towns, then, you know, maybe we'll find a way. I also know that it takes, just seems like it's going to take somebody to turn over their property. And is that where, I mean, yeah, do we have anybody in town that's willing to turn over their property to start something? I don't know. It's been frustrating because I've listened to it for so many years.
Great. Thank you, Colleen.
This is Elena. I agree, of course, that it's important. I don't have the solution right now. I think kind of to echo what Tina was saying, it feels like the affordable options are gone. So it's sort of like, as someone in Boulder in my 20s, I look at the people like, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ahead of me in life. And a lot of those are young families. A lot of them are up in the subdivision. There are also people not in that age group up in the subdivision. And it feels like they were kind of the last ones that got things that were affordable. So it feels like we need to figure out what the next version of that is. And with that, I wonder if we can figure out what the next version of that is, if there, it's possible to put sort of deed restrictions on that for selling to locals and such, so that, you know, if we were to make a new neighborhood, that it goes to people that are employed in town rather than people's vacation homes. Another comment I would make is that I think being part of the age group that is mostly looking for employee housing, I think that people are looking for, I think the place that we're really missing is people are looking for land ownership, not for rentals in a duplex for a while or something like that. I think people are somewhat able to find employee housing, and then they're just not able to graduate beyond that. They're able to come work at a business, find a place to live for a few years, decide they're committed to Boulder and want to be part of this community, and then have no way of graduating beyond whatever their original subpar housing was.
I like that, graduate. Yeah, the difference between, yeah, the rental and then ownership is, I think, an important one too.
Well, I think that is one of the things too, is even when I moved here almost 30 years ago, which is hard to say, one of the things that even at that point was there was a lot of ranchers here at that point, and their kids couldn't afford to come back. Most of them graduated and left because there was no jobs here for them. And it's never really changed. And the price of land has just skyrocketed, but there still are not any more better jobs here for people. I have four kids myself. I mean, you know, my kids would love to come back here. I know a lot of parents whose kids would want to come back here. And there are more jobs. We're finding that the sector, there's a huge population of people working from home, but those people also make a lot more money. And they're the ones that are moving here too, are people that are leaving the cities because they have jobs that they don't have to go to the office anymore, but we don't have those either. So I think that one of the things about housing is also, we need to look at the economics as far as what our community can do to provide more economic situations. And I don't know what the answer to that is.
Great. So I sort of want to wrap up this discussion, and I want to let's maybe figure out some homework and some ways to move forward with it for next month. It doesn't have to be a sprint, like John said, but you know, the things that I've heard that have come up that seem important to look at, you know, everyone I think said something really valuable, you know, so do we start moving towards a community forum, getting information? John, would you be willing to talk to some of those stakeholders one-on-one in the community and get more information? I think researching deed restrictions, and maybe Lee, you're a person for that, and figuring out, I like what Elena said, that now is sort of the time for that next step. It's a hard question, you know, and we might follow that one out a little bit as well. Not with any specific outcome in mind, but to see where they lead for now, as I don't want to like scare people or jump too fast, but any other priorities on the table that people want to add to that?
I'll also follow up in talking to some of these agencies that have been running projects in other areas and see if we can at least get some communication initiated. And I think Lee, you've probably been doing some of the same. So I think that's a big part is if I learned years ago in some of my other activism that showing people a successful project on the ground does a lot more good than having dozens of abstract meetings where you write things on big pieces of paper and post them on the wall. So I think we need to be looking at what's been done and then be able to ask ourselves, if we had a whatever, a house for rental to school employees in Boulder, would that be a good idea? You start with that's a good idea before you worry about where you'd put it. But I think we need to get some examples of successful things that we start feeling can be brought to Boulder. So yeah, that'll be part of the research, and Lee and I can exchange some emails about this as well in the next month.
Okay. And then I would also ask the rest of the commission to talk to people in town the next month. And then in June, when we come together, I would suggest that we tentatively plan how to make a community forum work and go from there after we've sort of dug in, gotten some more research and some more ideas from people on the ground. Does that sound legit?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Something I'm thinking about is that Tessa, within the last year or two, sent out a survey to a lot of the young people that work in town about what they would be looking for with housing options. And I could talk to her about that and bring kind of a summary of what was found there, because that was pretty recent.
That would be fantastic. And John and Lee, I'd like to be in on the loop of that discussion as well that you guys are having.
Certainly.
Okay. Great. Thank you for that discussion and for at least dipping our toes in. Lee, thanks for writing everything you did up around that. That's valuable information. And we're going to move to our next thing on the agenda, which is, let's see, John, I want to take 15 minutes tops on this. But I think some of you were at the town council meeting, and there were some requests from the town council, although we haven't seen them formally yet, around a few issues with the PC. Can you outline that for us and tell us what we need to hear, I suppose?
So, Colleen, were you on the top line for the town council meeting? Okay.
I was.
Okay, yeah, you were. So yeah, please correct me if I missed something. There were a couple discussions. The big one was with regard to the requirements for fire hydrants.
Sorry to interrupt one sec. I wanted to say, Lee, you're off the hook. Thank you for being here. But I think unless you want to stay, I think your presence on the rest of the agenda is not necessarily needed.
Thank you all. And you will see a memo from me about the flag lot easement, the whole thing about giving the Planning Commission some discretion to address that, as we discussed. You'll see that from me pretty soon. And then John and I will continue and involve you, Matt, in figuring out, you know, who might be suitable to come to a forum in Boulder to talk about projects that people would relate to. So with that, I will take my leave.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, John, back to you. Apologies.
So it was an interesting discussion because there was a lot of truth on both sides. Jim Campbell was correct as far as one section of the fire code, which the town has adopted, saying that giving some specificity as far as how far a building needs to be from a hydrant. On the other hand, Pete was pointing out that other sections of the fire code do clearly allow smaller private water supplies for fire protection. It sort of ended up the discussion that, well, this is a land use ordinance thing and that becomes a planning commission thing. So what, but it was never really a clear mission charge. And in fact, they may have even intended to not resolve it until the next meeting. So
is there anything the planning commission needs to do right now about fire code? Or I'm not even sure what our position is supposed to be on that.
What I would like to recommend is that we send a memo through Elizabeth Julian, who's our liaison to the town council, saying that our understanding is that they want us to work with stakeholders to develop proposed amendments to the subdivision standards and to the building permit standards to provide greater clarity as to town requirements for fire protection. That would really cover, I think, what they're talking about, would allow us to organize the information and put together some clear proposals, because ultimately the truth is there is hardship running hydrants great distances, but on the other hand, there are public safety benefits to having adequate water supply. So I think that becomes a political decision that does belong to the town council, but we can support them as an advisory body by getting those issues well stated. So that would be the recommendation I make, that we said through Elizabeth that we understand that they want us to do what I just said, and I could give that wording to Peg in writing.
Okay. And while Judy Drain here, our mayor, is on the call, would that be valuable for you and the town council, Judy, if you're there?
Okay, sorry. couldn't find my little button. Yes, I would love that. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so John, will you write that memo up, then get it to Peg, and then we can take some more action on it perhaps next month.
On that, before we...
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is a lot that can be deciphered as far as how the town wants to go ahead with this. I think it's jumping the gun to say we are going to write up something for the town council when there's not a real clear what we're writing up as far as detailed requirements. So I think we're jumping the gun by even saying that we're going to do that until we have a clearer.
Well, I guess my question is, where's the authoritative, you know, and experience sort of fire code that we go to in order to address currently the subdivisions and building permits?
Okay, I guess partly, and Tina, that was a good point. I left off the last sentence of what I had, which is to say that the issues that we would address would be emergency vehicle access, water supply, and fire breaks, which are all things Pete's brought up as part of fire protection. And those all tie into the development and subdivision and building code standards. The best thing I think we could do to answer Matt's question is that there are current practices used by other jurisdictions in Utah that have to address the Urban Wildland Interface Code. Some of the best examples I've found were with Eastern Summit County, where you have lots of these recreational homes being built up high on the mountain foothills that don't have year-round road access, don't have water. And I think the ways that that Summit County has addressed those problems gives us some good ideas to work with. But I think, yes, Pete, as our fire official, has got to be a key stakeholder in this. I think just getting all the information that's been mentioned organized will be a big service to the town council. But I think Pete's right. It's fire protection is a whole package.
So really just coming into clarification with it, with some of what other towns are doing with the fire marshal and so on, and having some clear language that the town council can work with is what you're suggesting.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Matt, what I understand too is I have lived in several parts of rural areas, Vernal being one of them. Another one was Wrightwood, California. And what the state has been working on in Utah because of fire being what it is right now and our water situation, people build these homes in areas that don't have access to water, is what they're saying. They can't get insurance on their homes. So that's why the change is happening through the state and through Utah to come down to our rural areas that we are so far away from a fire, what they call hydrant, that they can have insurance on their property to collect if there is fire problems. And I know that we had to, in Anemone, Utah too, we had to prove, we have a house down there and we had to prove that we were so close because of fire that was going on in that area at one point. So
got it.
It's a bigger issue than just being close to a fire hydrant and having it in our code. It's coupled with insurance on your property. So, and I think I've said it before. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thank you. Beyond the fire discussion, was there anything else from the town council that we needed to know about?
Jim Campbell brought up a question about why we're regulating short-term rentals in a person's home. And I think there was a confusion in the discussion between ADUs, internal ADUs, which are a use by right, and short-term rentals, which are a business proposition subject to the transient room tax. So I'm not sure. I think maybe a one-on-one discussion, just making sure that the distinctions are being understood might be helpful.
Okay, and who would be the person to talk to about that?
Well, Jim Campbell was the one who brought it up. Another thing would be simply to have someone at the next town council meeting from planning who could answer questions regarding the ADUs versus RSTRs. As our ordinances currently are written, that might be a good option.
Okay. Is there anyone willing to do that?
I could do that.
I can work with you in order to show up there beforehand, if that's helpful.
I think it's interesting that for me personally, because we worked on it for so long,
right.
You too, Matt, it seems like there are two very distinct entities. They're very self-explanatory if you just read, the ordinance.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that's my only comment is, but maybe we do need to have, like, maybe Elena go through and explain what we did and what the differences are from a different point. You know, because Elena didn't work with us on those. So maybe it would be good for her to look through them and see if it's easy to explain and get people to understand what we did. that make
sense? Elena, is Elena volunteering, or are you volunteering Elena?
Volunteering Elena.
Yeah, I'd be happy to explain it to them, but I also feel like, having been at the town council meeting as well, I sort of feel like they talked about it and talked about maybe passing it back to us and then decided to revisit it next month. And I sort of feel like, with Elizabeth as the liaison between Planning Commission and Town Council, I kind of feel like she'll come to us when she needs us. And it doesn't
okay.
feel to me, having been there, like they directly passed anything to us at this time. But right. I'm happy to be there at the next one and explain it if it comes up again.
Well, and Elizabeth okay. helped us with that too. She was on the Planning Commission at that time when we did both of those.
Well, Elena, I'll talk to you offline and let's get clear on that. And then we can decide whether to show up at the next town council or wait till we get a formal question on that. Great. Thanks for being there. Those who went to the town council.
This is Peg. Are you taking any comments from anybody? Peter and Donna both.
We'll take comments at the end.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to switch gears off this agenda and go to our last one. Do we have Kelly Cochran back on the call?
Yes, I'm here, and Sean's here as well.
Okay, great. So we're going to move on to our almost last item on the agenda, and that is the concept plan for the subdivision at Sugarloaf Valley Farms on their I don't know what you call your northern property, but and so for everyone here in Planning Commission and public, this is just a concept plan. We're here to work with Sean and Kelly and ask questions, see what they're up to. We're not approving or making decisions on anything tonight. We're simply trying to figure out what they're up to and providing suggestions for things that they may need to look at more closely and so on. Sound good? So I guess maybe Sean or Kelly, you can start with just an introduction of what you're up to, and then we'll come in as with the commission with more specific questions as we go along.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Hello, everybody. It's good to be here. I think some of you have probably seen a few different versions of this over the last year or two, which has changed a bit, but this is officially kind of a new concept that we are looking to get feedback on and answer any questions. And really, it's a concept plan that we're aiming to take everything we've learned. Specifically, we refer to this as the Deer Ranch, which is an 80-acre parcel. And we've just been continuously learning and figuring out what would be the highest use of the land long-term, with some specifics that we're focused on along with that, which would be how do we preserve the pasture and the farmland, and where would be the best places to put homes in places where, if they were developed, they would not interfere with any farmland and would be suitable. So this page is probably the best one to look at. And then the rest of it is kind of breaking down different views as far as the work we've done for where perk tests are being done, where we think septic would be, where the current utilities are, what the road looks like, where the irrigation is, where the water would need to come in and whatnot. And so without saying too much other than we're not looking to go and sell all of this, we do think that we would sell one to the original person who was going to buy when we first started this process, and probably want to sell one other lot once finished, but really are more interested right now in just getting the best possible subdivision done and learning as much as possible and answer as many questions. So I'll kind of pause right there.
So it looks like, Matt, you're frozen again. And are you there, Matt? You might want to turn your screen off again so that we can hear you.
Yeah, why doesn't... someone else start, and I go, I need to fiddle with something.
Okay, so I guess I'll go ahead and start, Sean. The lots look, the thing that I like about it is, like you said, you've been working on this for a couple of years now. We were just talking about lots and their different sizes and shapes, and they have very clear shapes. You've got your agriculture in the middle of it, and then you've got your lots along the side, which I like. I also heard you say basically that you're looking at the roads, the power, the sewer. And I guess once you start going through the subdivision ordinance and you keep working on this, it looks like a good start. That's my only comment.
Yeah, thank you. We did square up all the lines to the precision that we could get them to be as, you know, uniform and rectangular square as possible. So that was, I think, a good improvement from where we first started.
Can you hear me now? This is Matt.
Yep.
Okay. So some specific questions. Are you going to have possible, it's hard to tell without the sensitive overlays, like lot one looks like there's a bunch of steep territory on there. Will you have sort of building envelopes on your plat when you put it in with also sort of septic and where your perk tests are and so on?
Yeah, so on this one, we've gone through some of that, and there is a plat map being developed. These are extractions off of a map from the plat map just to make it more visible, so it's easier for conversation. But we assume that the next version, you know, we'd be bringing it for final approval would be a plat map with the all of the details laid out with elevations and coordinates. We do have on this the current perk test locations. I forget which page it's at. Kind of goes through each different lot in specific. Right. And then there's the road overview, the agriculture overview, the turnaround overview, or the turnarounds, I should say, for fire, the water overview, both irrigation and city, the adjacent lots and parcels around it, and then the perk test that we have and the current septic that we have. So we're getting as detailed as we possibly can to leave no stone uncovered here for the plat map to have everything, but please feel free to keep firing any questions away.
Yeah, so in lot 7 access, the road wraps around that northwest corner to access it. Is that how it's working?
That's right, yeah. So there's and these are current existing roads.
Okay.
That don't need to change location because the current access can take you, on this one you can see that orange is a turnaround area. Oops, you went past it, but, and then right north of that, there's actually two roads that you can't really see here, one that hugs right around the north side of the pasture and one that goes directly north and up to the west corner.
Gotcha. And lot 8, the pasture, well, is potentially down the road, is that also something that could be built on with one resident, or what's your intention with that?
No, so it's green belted and zoned right now, agricultural, and it's a pretty clean split of 45 to 35. So 45 acres of farmland, 35 acres of residential, if you did it this way. The farmland really comes with the existing water shares and they're needed there. You'd have to do quite a bit of thinking and changing along those lines if you're ever going to develop there, and we have no intention of that. In fact, it's pretty core to our current ranching operation that we keep that. And so the intention is how do we keep it maintained as pasture and farmland and probably not ever develop on it, but that would be, it's not in our plans at all right now. And I should mention that also lot 4, which is a larger lot as well, it has all of the current existing buildings on it as well. And so it's kind of got extra room around it, but it's part of the farmland as it stands right now too. I don't have any intention of changing that because it's operational.
Yeah, great. Okay, and are you guys planning on running culinary water out there? Will you be doing wells? Or
there's two well locations now, and doing quite a bit of research with the state of Utah and the current well rights that we have on other areas. You can transfer those. It's a bit of a process, and we could split to get the well water to take care of 6 and 7 and 4 and 5, but lots 1, 2, and 3 are not close enough, and there's not enough water without diverting quite a bit more from somewhere. and or putting in either culinary or wells. And so we've been getting quotes and estimates and, you know, understanding the code for both, just so we understand both. But right now, it would most likely be culinary.
Okay. And then will any of lots 1 through 7 have irrigation water on them?
They don't have irrigation. Right now, all of the irrigation comes, there's a purple line, I forget which page it is.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so it comes down to the very east north corner and directly goes all the way down to the bottom and then dead ends. We've got quotes currently on, yeah, if we stay here for a second, we've been looking at ways where we can actually pipe it to the middle, almost north side of the large farmland. And then you could run the irrigation all the way along the west side of the field and the east side. That would help irrigate the land a lot better for purposes of farming. So that's where we first started, but it's better utilization of the water. But because of the elevation, you also get a lot more pressure, and then it puts irrigation right next to every one of the residential, which could be very beneficial, especially for fire suppression if needed as a backup, and or for irrigation rights and access. So that is still being designed. We haven't really just figured out what is the best possible option. We're still just looking at options, but of course, whatever we do, we'll just make sure it fits to the ordinance.
Right. And I mean, I remember some discussion from your original plan a little bit, and obviously, you know, the roads have to be up to fire standard and so on, fire code, but the beyond your own private property, I remember there being some discussion, is that road coming in up to that standard as well? And have you considered that?
Yes. And so the road right now is really functional, and we've had the fire, the fire department out there, unfortunately, that's been able to come and turn around and everything else. We aren't really looking at an easement necessarily as a top priority at the very northwest corner, because once it gets up there, that's more in driveway territory. It would be that lot. Somebody would decide what they want to do for their own driveway. But we've drafted a road management agreement that would be an easement and management to keep up and maintain the road all the way through. That would be part of this as well, so that you would, you know, you'd kind of lock in the fact that the road has to always be completely accessible all the way to every parcel.
Right. And so, and then I guess my last, well, sort of question is, I know you're obviously somewhat aware of all that it takes to what you have to put on the preliminary plat and, you know, what needs to be checked off and all the documentation for us to, as a planning commission, to consider it and so on. But, you know, things like you have to have the write-offs on septic on Boulder Farmstead, on, you have to be able, you know, show the stormwater drainage and how that works on all those roads. And so just making you aware with that, and you'll be working with April or the zoning administrator is on that. So.
Yeah. And we've started to put all of that in here as the ability to make it easier for geolocating where everything would be, and then putting the paper applications and everything behind it. So it should all be there. And we'd like to just forward on a copy each time we make a substantial change to this between now and the preliminary. And our intention is to have our preliminary in form where you would look at it as if it was the final. And if it's not missing a thing, then of course we'll be able to at least kind of tighten it up a bit from there. But the idea would be to get every last detail on the plat before the preliminary.
Right. And just to be aware that until that time, really the liaison and the person you're working with is the zoning administrator and not the planning commission, right?
Yeah. So, April's zoning commissioner, yes.
Okay. I don't have any more questions. Does anyone else on the commission have questions?
This is Elena. I have a question regarding lot, I think it's 4, the one that Robert's house and the house John and Karen are living in is on.
Yes.
And that's more a question for us as a planning commission. There are 2 houses on there right now. There's the house that John and Karen live in, and there's the house that Robert lives in. Is that allowed on 1 5-acre lot to have 2 homes?
From my understanding, I'll just throw in here, and you guys might be able to add to it. But I believe that it would fall underneath the bunk. We call the one the bunkhouse because it's very small, as an additional unit or an ADU, I think you call it. But the we wouldn't be able to really move it or anything. But it was built that way as a farmhand house. There's a house, and then there's an additional next to it. And so, from what we've looked at, it seems to conform.
Any other questions from the commission?
I don't really have a question. I just have a suggestion. Yeah. It's a little awkward only because my husband is actually the fire marshal or authority at this point. I kind of think it would be a great idea because of the access to this full subdivision, if you were able to clear some kind of access only for emergencies at the north end. So if something happened on the south end, say a fire, that the access to get out of there would be a possibility, or the fire truck would have access into that area. It's just a thought.
Yeah, no, actually, I think we did that. So when we first started looking at this, the original lot we were looking at was much different, but it was at the very north west corner. So I think what we're calling now five. And if you scan up to where you see orange, the page that has an orange turnaround, we cleared out and removed an area that is unused currently that was suited for the turnaround of the first one. Let's see where we're at. Yeah, right here. So this orange diagram right here, we can probably make a lot more clear, but this was the previous turnaround that we worked with. So you have the roundabout once you get to lot four, but coming up the driveways and before you get to five and six, that would be the area where there's a full turnaround. And there's actually another way to turn around past that, but we didn't highlight it. So that has definitely been part of the plans. And we had gone out there, I believe, in person, and then cleared it out some more. So that will definitely be in the plans. Does that answer the question? Or because I think we did anticipate that and put quite a bit of time into it.
I'm going to kind of pick up on that. I think it's a very nice subdivision and has a lot of appeal. So I can see what you're trying to accomplish. And a lot of these issues I'm going to bring up may as much be things that we need to fix in our subdivision ordinance, but under the way the ordinance is written right now, it could be problematic for you. Definitely, you're going to need to prove culinary water and septic for all lots. And now we have the issue that's being brought up about what do we require for fire hydrants on these types of lots that are far from the existing older farmstead system. So that's something you're going to that's going to come back and be discussed many times, I'm sure, before we get this one finalized. A second one is that since this is not a subdivision with four or fewer lots, it doesn't fall under the private driveway exemption that we just forwarded to town council. And my reading is that under the current ordinance, your road has to come up to the town street standards in 152.041H4, which are pretty restrictive as far as the quality of the road. So, but that's my reading of the current ordinance, that's what would be required. I will back up, Tina, that I have a real serious concern about long dead-end roads. In fact, this would not meet, I don't think this would meet the urban wildland interface code for road access because of the potential number of residences. So I would pick up from where Tina left off and say that it'd be wonderful if you coordinated with the landowners to the north and potentially found a way to make that road looped. It would not have to be open to the public as a loop road, but at least open to emergency vehicle access from more than one direction. Because if there was a fire, as Tina said, down at the south end, that could be a real problem for somebody with a house up at the north end of that subdivision. So I think I would say that we really need to encourage every subdivision to look at making multiple points of access to the subdivision road. Let's see.
I have a question on that, actually, to your points. I spent a ridiculous amount of time and money actually working on how to get that to happen with the private access to the north. And really, it comes down to needing to sort it out kind of with some legal paperwork to get an easement or to get agreement. But I was not able to get any agreement on it with the existing landowners. And so I don't know if that, you know, that's obviously my expectation is that we're going to get this approved in the next 30 to 60 days because I have to. And so whatever has to happen there, I'm just curious what potentially could be your thoughts on that. I don't think I have the ability necessarily or the resources to force it without a bit of a heavy expense in a legal fight, which doesn't sound that appealing, but there might be some other alternatives that people might think of that we haven't thought of. The best workaround that I had was the turnaround ability. So you don't have, like a lot of property, you don't have an access on both sides. A lot of properties just have access on one side, but that you would have full turnaround to be able to get in and out easily in multiple places.
I guess my answer in the short one is the fact that we may at some point in the future change our ordinances to absolutely require multiple access points doesn't affect you because you have to have this approved and evaluated under the current ordinances as they exist or as they will exist after the town council acts on what we sent them tonight. But yeah, you're governed by the current ordinances. But it is a concern. It is something I think that as we talk about subdivision ordinances, we do have to really address multiple routes of access in case of a fire, especially. But
John, wouldn't you say at this point that Sean has to, the authority at this point on it is the fire marshal?
That's right. And as I say, I think right now it would not pass muster under the urban wildland code because we have a four lot exemption for private driveways. The urban wildlife interface code has a five lot exemption, but we're at eight lots. So that could be that under the current ordinances could be problematic. But again, it's sort of up to the proponent to be creative and figure out how to comply with the ordinances.
Well, and if I understand it correctly, also from when I started this and kind of my understanding of doing everything under the current ordinances since I started the plan, that the, you know, the standards of roads and streets will have to be at a standard, and the road management and maintenance agreements are what would have to do that. Because let's say that there were different owners of each one of these, it's not a public road. Although it's very similar to the road that is very poorly maintained just on the entrance to this off of Lower Boulder Road. And it's also got four or five different homes off of it as well and in pretty poor condition. So that would have to be dealt with by all those landowners to come up to whatever standard this comes up to as a note for everybody. Because it's probably in worse condition actually than our current. But then those landowners, in the way that we've drafted it and gotten counsel, each one of them would be responsible to a specific standard. And you can do it a lot of different ways as far as collecting dues through a management company that's held up for it, or you just put it to everybody to where they have to hold up their own standard because each one of them would then have their own private access to it, right? So, and they're really effectively going to be on a road. So they're going to have to maintain that to that standard. And that would be part of the sales agreement and contract.
Yes, I don't envy you trying to negotiate this one. And I think this is exactly why Lee says that, you know, access easements have some real problems over time because of issues like this. But yes, you're going to have to negotiate that. The other one that's really confusing, I looked at lot four, and we have these standards for front setback and side setback. I'm not sure how that's going to apply to lot four. I wish you luck in finding a solution that meets the letter of the ordinance so we can sign off on it. I think Matt already mentioned sensitive lands and slope on lot one. And I guess I'll just make a note for the minutes, Peg, that we will identify this as the 301 East 1600 South, which will come up on Utah parcels as the address of this project, since I've encouraged that we include the address in the minutes. But I hope at some point, Sean, that you're expected, you will assign some sort of addresses to all the lots. So that was my comments.
Yeah, one question for your front, when your comment on lot four setback front and back, can you elaborate on what that is?
Well, okay, so we say that your principal dwelling is supposed to have all the buildings are supposed to have a 30-foot front setback, which you've always interpreted as being from the road. But in this case, the road goes right through the middle of the lot, so I'm not sure what we would call the front setback.
Are they roads or are they driveways?
That's another thing that's not real clear in our ordinance is what the front setback means. You might convince us that the side of the lot toward the pasture is the front of the lot, and that meets it. But I'm just pointing out that I as we come through the review, that's one of the specific development standards is the setbacks. You're right. The ordinance is not clear how it's determined in a case like this where you have the driveway through the middle, which is the front of the lot, which is the side.
Yeah. I think
you can probably come up with something that does actually comply. But
looking at this a lot, you know, the challenge obviously is that it's clearly driveways now. And that lot in particular is still being used as a ranch and farmland. And so it operates with the turnaround and a lot of heavy equipment that goes up and down these roads all the time. And the situation of the horse corral and the barn, multiple barns and livestock is kind of leaves it to be more under the guidelines. When you really look at it, it's operating like ranch land. And so I think it brings up a whole nother topic where there's an easement maybe between that and the other lots that you have some options around. But everything I've looked at still comes back to looking at it like driveways, because if you were to cut a road and leave it on the parcel, if let's say you did a straight line and put a road where the road was entirely on the large farmland parcel and nobody has road maintenance, well, then who's going to maintain that? And if you sold that farmland, who's going to maintain that road? So then it like only works if it were a real true publicly managed town road where they come in and put the tar down and grade it and you pick up the cost, where if you do it any other way, every way I've sliced this and looked at it, it really has to be driveway and private access. And so the way that we worked through that with advice from council was that you have to have a management contract and the easement. So of course the easement will be in all of the title and recordings, it'll be a written easement, but the management contract has to be of a specific standard for each party to where they're accountable to that standard, because they're driveway management contracts more than really public roads, or it'd have to be a much bigger topic with the public road, which right. I don't think makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you luck on going through this. And as I said, I think what I'm pointing out, many of these issues are things that really we have to look at fixing our ordinances. But since you're going to be under the current ordinances, they may prove to be complications. And if you can come up with creative answers so we can check the box, that'll help all of us.
Yep. And I appreciate the luck and the wish. Thank you. And I appreciate all the comments. I think it's very helpful.
Yeah. Great. Unless there are any last thoughts.
Matt,
thank you, Sean. Yeah,
I'd like to make a comment about the road or the street. Definitely, I mean, my interpretation and the way we've been talking about this for months, the way it's currently written, it would not be able to be a driveway back to eight lots.
So then who ends up owning the road?
It can be a privately owned street, but there are standards
But privately owned by who?
I guess you, the developer of the subdivision, or?
No, I'm not necessarily going to be the developer of the subdivision. These are lots to be legal parcels that somebody could develop, and they'd have to develop them to land, and we would be, of course, not able to sell them unless they were there, but we wouldn't be developing this before it was subdivided. You'd have to get through that process, and I'm not intending to be here. Like, I don't think it works with property rights where you have locked in as a subdivision as a development. From the same standpoint that, yeah, I think we have to address it from the standpoint of if all of these sold and I died and somebody separately owned every one of them, who owns the road?
Well, you know, most commonly in cases like this, with a more urban type subdivision, you have a homeowners association where every lot has a share in that homeowners association. And the homeowners association has the ability to assess owners dues to pay for the maintenance costs, and that's all set up as a legal entity that owns the road. Whether that works for you or not is a big question, but Elena's right. My reading of it is that the access to those lots needs to meet the street standards, and there needs to be a plan for permanent maintenance of the street. What exactly that means in practice on the ground, I think, it does have some interpretation. And again, as proponent, you can propose things that meet the letter of the law.
Yeah, and that's what we ended up doing with the road maintenance management agreement. Each property owner would have to do their own, because what you're setting the precedent is that each party, in the event that there's no large commercial subdivision, which this is not, this is rural and small, if you think about it, comparatively to what an urban large development where you would have ongoing HUD and, you know, home association fees and management, common area and taxes. And this is really looking at how does each one of them have their own access, their own utilities, their own standalone for all of the requirements so that they could be their own tax parcels and not need to be a part of an association or a urban type development. Maybe some of these don't get developed at all.
Hey, Sean, I have a question about that, though. Does big equipment have to go up and down that road to run the farm?
Currently, yeah.
Okay, that would be my question with it. I don't know if those homeowners would pay for the damage of that equipment that you've already established on that road. That might be an issue. I don't know. I'm not saying that I know anything, but it's...
Well, I would say it's actually the opposite. Right now, that equipment is what continues to maintain and keep the road managed more than anything else. The fact that we constantly run graders and tractors over it is what maintains the road. And again, if at some point when you go to the standards of the town, then you're talking about a real, truly paved road to some degree.
So, Sean, I would suggest with further questions on the road issue, and I'm volunteering you, John, that you might work offline because John's probably our most knowledgeable on the specifics of the ordinance at this point. But, you know, it sounds like there's some things we're still trying to suss out on that. But, you know, I can clearly see that you've done your homework on that end of it. So yeah, a lot of respect for that. Do you have any more questions before we tail off here?
Just be sure you involve Pete early on, because I think the fire access is going to be a big issue.
Yeah, I involved Pete 2 years ago and a year ago and 6 months ago, and I've continuously been working with fire as the main predominant topic. This is not new. This road topic goes back about 2 years.
Yeah.
But I will for sure. And thank you. And who is the John I should be working offline with if possible?
John Verant. Yeah. Your next door neighbor.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, John.
Great. Thank you for bringing this to the Planning Commission. And good luck with it. And we'll see you,
thank you all.
Further on in the process.
We'll be back. Thank you very much for the questions, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Matt, can I just make a comment to the commission and in general that I think
when we talk about these subdivisions, we have to assume that all lots will be developed at some point.
Yeah.
Like when it said there are 8 lots, a few of them may not be developed. I think we just have to operate under the assumption that they will be because they can be.
Correct. Okay, so that's it tonight, except for 2 more things. And first is, let's see, before we go into business for next meeting, I just want to open up the floor for a few minutes for final public comments. I know, Pete, you had something to say, and thank you for being patient. I don't need to make a motion for that, do I, Peg?
No.
Okay, so the floor is open for final public comments, please, on anything that you have to say.
This is Peter. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So let's see, a couple things. The road for Sean's subdivision is going to be a big deal. And I think John kind of covered most of the issues. If Sean can work with the Barshes, there's a road that goes almost to that corner. And I don't know if there's any way to get the Barshes to cooperate. That would be great. I can't remember. There was some other thing that I was wanted to, when I raised my hand initially, I can't remember what it was that I wanted to make a point about, but
I think it was when we were discussing the town issue with fire, and I'm not sure what the specific was, but yeah.
You'd made a chat comment about HOAs.
Oh yeah, well that was but the road thing that John brought up, it's basically the fire thing is, we'll see how that goes. I don't want to say too much about that right now. I just wanted to mention that, you know, the roads on Sean's subdivision.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Dawn Owen is raising her hand.
Yeah, I've been listening to the very thoughtful conversation about the subdivision and the roads. I know that it's an issue, but it felt to me like working with Sean on this, but in Sean's position, that it's unclear what you're asking for the road. You're just saying good luck. You are the ones who are either going to give us luck or not. I would love to know whether what you're requiring, what you want to see. I just would like to have an answer so that we aren't, you know, constantly being batted around. If that's possible, I don't know who makes that final decision. Will you just wait till we spend money on a plat and on this fancy drawings and then say, well, here's what we really meant? Is there some way to get clarity on what exactly has to be done or not, or what would be allowed to be a hardship and not done somewhere? I don't know.
I mean, I directed Sean to both the fire marshal and to John Durant for the details and specifics to get worked out. I think that's the best we can.
So will John make the decision on what is
no, required? We're not making decisions. We're just.
No, just on what's required. When will we know what's required?
Well, like I said, we'll let John and Sean maybe work with that offline, and we don't have the ordinances laid out in front of us, so we can't give you a specific answer right now.
Okay. Well, okay. Just wanted to know when we would. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other comments? Okay, then let's move on to business for June meeting. What do we got?
A couple things here, Matt. I'm not sure, maybe April can give us some input, whether we ever came to closure on how we are going to handle Stacy Davis's temporary housing. I think that may have been resolved, but we should at least have her, for the record, tell us whether we've come to closure on that.
Okay.
This is Peg. I had an email conversation with Stacy today, and she had thought she'd applied for something. She was kind of unclear, didn't know, asked me for a copy of a conditional use permit. So in other words, I don't think anything has happened on it, and I'm unaware that April's received anything from her regarding conditional use application. So, but it is being worked right now. So we'll-
Okay, so, it, so I guess April could come back and give us an update on where that stands, whether there's anything that needs to come to us for action.
Yeah, I think we wouldn't know for another couple of weeks if we get it or not.
Okay. Another one I wanted to mention, there was an email that Peg circulated a couple months ago regarding billboards converted to electronic signs. And we have a couple grandfathered off-premises signs here in Boulder. That's something, it seems to be pretty straightforward that we just put in some clear wording that says that a grandfathered electronic or grandfathered off-premises signs can't be converted to electronic billboards. But that's something we might want to put on our agenda to take to look at that recommendation that Utah League of Cities and Towns sent out.
So this is an update on signage, something not following.
Yeah, so the Utah League of Cities and Towns sent out an advisory to everybody. Billboards, which are defined as off-premises signs, are a grandfathered use, and a town has very limited authority to phase them out. And what the Utah League of Cities and Towns alert said was, if you don't have specific wording that keeps one of those from being converted to an electronic sign, one of these things that flashes and changes its messages, the existing owner can probably change it and you can't do anything about it unless you've already passed an ordinance to prohibit it. So that's okay. One we should. It's a small piece of housekeeping, but it would probably be a good one to protect the character of Boulder.
Okay. So give us a title for it for the agenda next week.
I think Kate Kopischke's memo on electronic signs would be the item. And I think Peg's got that, sent that memo out. Do you have that, Peg?
Yeah, I can find it.
Yeah. So that, and there was a PDF guidance document that they attached.
Mm-hmm. I'll find it.
Okay.
Okay. Then we're going to have Peg a further discussion on the housing issue.
And you're going to be talking specifically about setting
set up follow up on research and about possible community forum.
Okay.
We don't know if depending on paperwork, we just might put it in quotes if everything's taken care of with Fogel Fuller subdivision, there's a possibility of that, but it's not there yet.
Okay.
Where do we want to then, what was Lee going to be working on?
He was going to send you he said he would write up the language for how, what do I have written here? Standard, he'd write up a standard giving Planning Commission discretion on the width ratio.
Okay.
Length width ratio.
So that's a topic, yeah, we want to cover. And where do we want to move next with our Titanic subdivision changes?
I would recommend that we really hold off on anything other than the immediate amendments until we really look at questions like encouraging clustering, encouraging preservation of open space, because they all tie together. And I think what we need to do with subdivisions is first start with what's our goals, and then identify what are the problems with our current ordinances, and then we can get down into, well, what ordinances need to be changed in what way. But I think we need to go all the way back to asking what's our goals and what are the problems we're trying to solve.
So a strategy suggestion session is what you're suggesting.
That really needs to come out of this community workshop about housing,
right?
Because you, as you look at Lee's memo, we're talking all of these things affect what we allow or don't allow in terms of subdivisions,
right?
So kind of back off from, you know, put the minor subdivision ordinance on hold, and go back to what are we trying to accomplish?
Right. Gotcha. That's all I got. We know it'll stack up somehow. So unless there's anything else, that's a
make a motion that we close the planning commission meeting for tonight.
Yeah. I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Helen Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Barath, aye. And Shelley should be voting on this.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Why?
Why? Oh,
wait,
we don't
have
a
vote.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
it's okay. I was thinking it's a choose.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you everyone for thoughtful discussions tonight and good work, and see you next month. Thank you, Peg.
Yep, thank you.
Yep, good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.